Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Freddy Krueger here, and you're listening to Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the crew this week in Geek.net.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.
What's going on? You are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am one of your two hosts this week. That's right. It is I, Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm not alone on this Easter weekend slash April Sunday, though you're listening to this on Monday. So hopefully you had yourselves a happy zombie Jesus day. But I am joined with
Alex, who wasn't fired like everybody else. They're all dead. Help, help, help.
April Fools is one of those times of the year that I actually hate being in the media, because every asshole who thinks they're witty and funny writes a headline and goes, ha ha ha, look at the news, you got fooled.
Unless you're Pornhub, and then you win.
Yeah, Pornhub this year did hot, sexy French horns.
It was Hornhub. Where was it last year, or the year before? It was Cornhub?
Or something like that.
And it was all people like growing corn, and like the comments were all fake comments like, oh, fuck yeah, shuck that corn.
Yeah, it was freaking ridiculous. And I found out about it from Facebook. I mean, this year, one of the funniest April Fool's gags I saw was, once again, ThinkGeek, who tends to knock it out of the park. It was a Jurassic Park dinosaur detector, and it was just a glass of water sitting on top of like a wooden coaster thing, and it goes threat level by how much your glass is vibrating. And I thought that was actually kind of clever. Other than that, I saw the Toronto Islands are going to be turned into a Disney theme park that Walt Disney bought WWE for $5 billion. Excuse me. Sorry.
Burpee.
I know someone always gets pissed when I burp in there. I'm sorry. I genuinely didn't feel it coming.
No, you have to have it in symphony. We have to all burp or nobody
burps. Fart, or other bodily functions, I'm quite sure. You're all amused and used to hearing. So like I said, I hope everyone had a good zombie Jesus day. And I remember there's this one meme going around, and it's been around for quite some time. And it's like, Jesus wasn't a vampire. He wasn't a zombie. He was a witch. Because Jesus had powers. He could raise the dead, water to wine. So technically, Jesus was just a really low-level mage who happened to come back from the dead. So technically, he is a witch.
A wizard.
Yeah, exactly. Undead wizard.
But I guess lawful good?
Lawful good, and yeah, because there's no law. Because that's the thing. In D&D, if you listen to our Cambridge Chronicles podcast, TerribleWarriors.com, by the way, you can be a lich and still be a good guy, more or less. I mean, I guess you still have to bargain with dark powers, but good people can extend their lives as well, like Merlin, I guess even Dumbledore from Harry Potter, but that's a whole new kettle of fish. And that's one fandom I like Harry Potter, I'm just not into. In fact, actually, we were actually talking about fandoms this past week.
Yep.
Me and my wife, Blair, were watching the Maze Runner movies, and I described them as baby's first apocalypse.
And it really is an introduction, because you got to remember, these are made for the most part for
young adults.
When they say young adults, it's mostly geared towards women, young women that are in the 12 to 16 category of age.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they put in the sci-fi flair, and that appeals to everybody. But for the most part, this is sort of their... They might not have read hard sci-fi, probably not, and this is their introduction. And it goes for a different type of demographic. Hard sci-fi goes for setting up the concepts, the morality, the lessons, and the critiquing of society itself, and then adds character.
Yeah.
Whereas this is the exact opposite. It's all character, and then they flavor it with science fiction.
I mean, yeah, because you've got stuff like The Hunger Games, you got stuff like Divergent, you got trying to think of other young adults.
There's one that have failed, Mortal Instruments, and they've tried, what was the other, Golden Compass. There are a bunch of them that didn't make it.
Yeah. We'll actually be talking a little bit about fandoms later on in the show, because since it's just me and Alex, things are going to be done a little bit different today. In today's show, you're going to hear our review of Detective Pikachu. We're also going to be giving our impressions, as Alex promised last week, on Ready Player One. But we're going to talk about the golden age of television and sort of some of the weirdness and things that we've seen come out recently, and wondering if we're in some kind of a television renaissance right now.
Yeah, reboots, remakes, reimaginings.
And we'll also give you our full review and thoughts on the first 10 episodes of Reboot the Guardian Code. So stay tuned right here to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. And without any further ado, let's throw things over to Alex and his review of Detective Pikachu.
Hey, Alex here, and I had the opportunity to review Detective Pikachu, developed by Creature Inc., which they're best known for working with the Pokemon Company, co-developing titles such as Pokemon Ranger for the Nintendo DS, Poke Park for the Wii, and providing the Pokemon modeling for Pokemon X and Y for the 3DS, published by Nintendo, of course, for the 3DS. It's out right now. It came out March 23rd in North America and Europe, and then a while ago in Japan. It's retailing for $40 American and about 50 or so Canadian, depending on the retailer you go to. And the basic synopsis of it is Detective Pikachu follows a talking Pikachu that you as the audience can listen to and understand, but nobody in the world except for a young boy named Tim Goodman. He encounters him one day and realizes that he can understand what Pikachu is saying. So they decide to work together to solve mysteries. And I'm not going to go into the plot of the game beyond that, simply because the entire game is about the plot. There isn't anything that I could reveal that would be pertinent beyond that. As far as graphics go, it's very high resolution for the 3DS. There's character models that are very vibrant and are reminiscent of what you'd see in a TV show itself. In fact, higher res than some TV cartoons. Detective Pikachu is absolutely adorable with his little Sherlock Holmes hat and getup. and the way everything interacts, it feels like you're much more a part of the world than in previous Pokemon titles. The music is very catchy and very appropriate for the setting, so it doesn't seem to take away from anything. It sort of builds in the background and doesn't really come to the forefront. It's not like the music is driving the game is driving the music. The voice acting is absolutely spot on, and while many people are thinking that it sounds like a famous actor playing Pikachu, it's actually a normal voice actor playing, who I don't have the name of here directly, but a lot of people were thinking it was Will Arnett, and it's not Will Arnett playing it, whereas the Hollywood movie is going to have, you know, famous people doing the voices. The voice acting is very solid, and it really makes you feel that you're a part of the game, and it's not like you're reading a whole lot of text. When Pikachu talks, it's absolutely hilarious, because it almost sounds like I said, a Will Arnett mixed with a bit of Danny DeVito. It's like, hey, I'm Pikachu, how's it going? And he talks very matter of fact, doesn't talk in the predictable way that you'd think for a Pokemon. He acts very human-like. The controls and gameplay of it, it's a little different than what you'd expect from a Pokemon game. It is an adventure, point-and-click adventure, mystery title, a la Professor Layton or the Phoenix Wright series. So you're interacting with humans and Pokemon by selecting topics from a list that you curate by interacting with other objects in the area. So, for instance, the first mission and first case, you are trying to get a necklace back that was stolen by some Pokemon. So you interview all the people in the area. There's a list that pops up that you can select from predetermined options. You know, ask about the necklace, ask about the Pokemon, and they'll get responses. Now, if you talk to a Pokemon, Pikachu himself will speak to the Pokemon and relay the messages to you. And let's say the Pokemon knew something, you can then go talk to the humans and bring up what the Pokemon mentioned as a new option. So you're investigating. Basically, you talk to everybody, talk to everything, pick up everything off the ground that you can, and then you open up your menu. And in your menu, you can go over the evidence you currently have, just reading it. You can read previous text options that you got dialogue from. You can then also talk to Pikachu if you want to get tips. And then there's a part where you'll have to solve individual puzzles to move the story along. The only other style of gameplay outside of solving the puzzles and interacting are there's some timed events, some quick time events that happen as you play. So something will be thrown at you from a tree, so you've got to avoid it, so press the button at the exact right time. Or you've got to lift something, so you're pressing the button as many times as you can till you get to that point, as long as the timer doesn't run out. And if it does, then you just start over again and redo it till you get it right. And that being said, it's pretty cool because it's easy enough that kids can play that part and not get frustrated with it. The main part of the game is finding all these clues and then solving each individual mission and moving on to the next case. Now, when you solve a case, it presents you with a logic puzzle. You have to answer a question of, oh, who do you think did this and why? And you drag and drop the evidence pieces that you've collected into the right spots. And if you get it wrong, you have to do it over again. But if you get stumped, you can just press the button that will actually continue on for you. It'll solve the puzzle and move on, so you're never really going to be stumped. So in that sense, the game itself has a varying difficulty. It's never too difficult for children, or if you're playing with your kids or playing with children, or you are a kid, you can get through the game just fine and experience the whole story. Or you can play it on normal or easy. There's a normal and easy mode. You can play it on normal, and playing it on normal makes it the timing a little off and makes the puzzle a little bit harder as you go. So you can make it as challenging or as easy as you want to play. Now, I won't go into the story, because the story is the meat and potatoes. Just say that it is a very cute story, and it is a very cool idea for a Pokemon game. Now, you can replay it as much as you want, but the missions are going to be the same each time, so take your time, go through the game. It's very, very conducive to playing it on the go in small bursts, because it does save every time you leave an area and go into a different room. It auto-saves for you, and you can just continue back from where you were. Now, as far as my final thoughts on this, it's found the sweet spot in that it's easy enough to play for children, but it's compelling enough for adults to get into, especially since it feels like you're interacting with a detective cartoon television series hybrid sort of game. If you like Professor Layton and the Phoenix Wright games, you want something that all ages will be happy to play, this is something for you, and it's going to get you hyped for the movie that eventually comes out. I say it's highly recommended. Just go out and buy it today.
News on the mark!
Thank you, Alex, for that review of Detective Pikachu, which is now available on your Nintendo 3DS, both digital, and you can walk in your store and actually buy the thing if you so desire.
Yep.
Okay, so, as I mentioned off the hop of the show, we're not having a news topic this week, and we're not really going to do weird news this week. Either we're actually going to kind of talk about a topic. Rather, think of this as a Twig editorial / review talking about the golden age of television. Has it finally come back, especially with all these reboots, relaunches, and different approaches to television that have happened in the last little while? Plus, we're going to talk about Netflix's reboot, The Guardian Code, because thankfully we were able to check that out thanks to some friends in some interesting places, and that's all I'm really going to say about that, so I can't get into trouble. You can't prove it.
America is awesome. We'll just say that.
Yeah, exactly. I love America. But let's start off by talking about how things have really changed. In the last couple of years, there's been a bunch of revivals and reboots to classic television shows, to classic movies, and some of them have been more successful than others. Some of them being downright terrible, some of them being surprisingly good. And one of the ones that came out, and this kind of is what spurred on this conversation, is Alex brought over the first two episodes of the new Roseanne reboot. Roseanne, for those of you that aren't necessarily familiar, was a sitcom that ran in the 90s, I believe, on ABC.
87 to, was it 90, or 88 to 90, 98, something like that?
Yeah, it ran for 9 seasons.
Yeah, or 89, yeah, 89 to yeah. Basically a 90s show.
And it was more or less one of those shows that focused on the Connors, who lived in Lanford, where was it?
Illinois.
Lanford, Illinois, sort of middle of America, your average blue-collar family with Dan and Roseanne raising their kids, Becky and Darlene and DJ, and their ups and downs. And it was sort of seen as the new incarnation of All in the Family, to be the representation of America that wasn't super rich, super well-off. They were just ordinary people. Go to work every day, come home, do their shtick.
You know, try to get by. When a recession hits, these people did not have a nest egg.
Yeah, it was like, oh God, how are we going to make rent? How are we going to make the mortgage or whatever? And it dealt with a number of different things, such as gay and lesbian issues. It dealt with domestic abuse, alcoholism. Shows and topics that have been dealt with by other sitcoms before, but this was in a much more realistic light. And the show has come back. Back in 2018, with a revival where Roseanne's character, Roseanne Connor, is a Trump supporter, very Republican, and her sister,
Jackie,
was a Hillary supporter, very much to be the uber Democrat, very, very far left.
And she was always the free-spirited, you know, out there one. That so that's just sort of an extension of her character.
Yeah, exactly. Very liberal-minded. And going into this, when I first heard that the character of Roseanne was going to be very, very pro-Trump, I didn't quite know what to expect going into this. I expected it to be ridiculously over-politicized. And to a degree, I'm not wrong. But
in the pilot.
In the second episode, they back off on it a fair chunk. And I think Sarah Gilbert went on Twitter and said they don't talk about the politics anymore on the show past a certain episode. It's just, all right, we've talked about it, we've established it, now we're moving on to actual comedy. Don't quote me on that. I saw it on a Twitter Moments thing. So whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. Probably should have checked my sources on that one, I admit. But that being said, Roseanne's revival surprised me. I did not expect it to be as good as it was. I had genuine laughs. John Goodman comes back as Dan Connor after dying in the 9th season.
Yeah, they killed him off because he wanted to leave, and then the writing went to shit. Everybody knows the reason the 9th season was garbage was Roseanne went a little power crazy with it, and it became too much like the Drew Carey show and not the Roseanne we wanted. You watch Drew Carey because it's wacky. You watch Roseanne because it's grounded. Grounded and real and not sappy. That's what it always was. And she really screwed the pooch on the last season.
Yeah, it got so ridiculous and stupid as to the point of just overt mockery.
So they make two jokes directly in it that reflected that 9th season. There's a joke right at the beginning, and it's in the trailer, so we're not spoiling anything for it if you haven't seen it yet, but surprising if you haven't. It starts with him waking up, Dan waking up, going, you know, what? She goes, I thought you were dead. And he goes, why does everybody always think I was dead? So there's that reference, and then there's a reference later on in the episode
where they go into the garage
and they find where she wanted to become a writer, and I think it was season 8, and then season 9 turned out at the end of the season that this was all a fabricated story she wrote. They'd said that in the final episode 20 years ago, and she reads it, and it's basically the season 9 script, or at least a script for it, and Dan goes, oh God, you know, the problem was you killed off the most important character, the one that everybody loved.
Yeah.
He was a gentle giant.
And then Roseanne goes, well, if I had more bondage and a wizard school, this would have been more successful.
Yeah.
Which definitely got a laugh out of me, a laugh and a chuckle.
And the big thing, too, it is a traditional sitcom a la Big Bang Theory or any of those three-camera setups, but it's not just filmed in front of a live audience. They use the live audience as the laughter, which hasn't happened in my mind since at least the 90s, maybe early 2000s they stopped that. Big Bang films in front of an audience, but they use canned laughter, and you can tell because it's a laugh every 10 seconds and it's the same laughter every time. This had different laughs at different times, different volumes. It felt more organic, like a real sitcom used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I was genuinely surprised how well Roseanne holds up. I'll be very curious to see how the series progresses. I know ABC has ordered an additional 13 episodes
for season 2.
So we will see more.
And I guarantee you one of those episodes will be a Halloween special.
I hope so, because Roseanne, Home Improvement would always have their themed episodes every year, and they would prove to be successful, which would be the precursor to stuff like Community's paintball and D&D episodes.
Yeah, because I remember every year growing up, we had to watch The Simpsons Halloween, and the Roseanne Halloween had to as a family.
And I even remember with... about to say, it wasn't Home Improvement. I think Friends had themed episodes, but Drew Carey and really kicked it off.
Yeah, Drew Carey had it, and there were some Fresh Prince ones that would occasionally do a Halloween episode or a Christmas episode. But Roseanne was always the bread and butter. Like, they used to get 30, 40 million viewers in the 90s watching. Now, that's before the days of cable exploding everywhere and with a million channels and DVRs. But to tell you what the ratings were comparatively, Big Bang up to this point has been the highest rated series about 6 years in a row, comedy wise, and they were averaging about 13 to 16 million live viewers, and that includes like the plus 7 DVR days that you have on it, and the demographic, you know, getting too much into that, like it's not necessarily all in the right demographic as far as advertising rates go. Roseanne did 18 million the day one for both hours. They didn't lose any viewers, they gained viewers over the full hour they aired. And the prediction is after the live plus 7 with this weekend, they're looking at 25 million people. There hasn't been a sitcom that had 25 million viewers since Roseanne in the 90s.
Now, one thing I think that is a strength for Roseanne is the writing, especially in the first two episodes. She's a Republican, pro-Trump, whatever. They don't super cram it down your throat, I think. If I'm wrong, feedback this weekendgeek.net.
I didn't believe they did. I believe that what they were showing was...
it was a joke.
It was a joke, but also they did research. They went to the area that that city is supposed to be in, and there was a 90% Trump city.
Yeah, so...
so regardless, you vote with what your neighbors do, you vote with what the people you work with do, and you vote with... Roseanne is an intelligent person, but Roseanne was never a college-educated person from a college town where they'll all vote a certain way. She voted what would make sense to her and where she lives.
And they even made fun of Jackie. Instead of voting for Hillary, she voted for Jill Stein.
Yeah, neither of them knew who she was.
They're like, I don't know, she's a doctor and she's crazy, but I did it anyway. They even have, DJ has a mixed family. He has a black daughter.
And that was addressed. I watched an interview. It'll be revealed that there was an episode where DJ didn't want to kiss the black girl. That was the episode.
Yeah.
And it's been forever, so I can't remember if it was a play. I think it was a play or something where he didn't want to kiss her. And it turns out that he married that girl in the continuity of the series.
Which is cool.
And she's over as a soldier fighting in Syria or Iraq or something like that.
They also have a transgendered character who is Becky's son.
No, Darlene's son.
Darlene's son, sorry.
But he's not... They question it, but they handle it pretty well. It's not that he's just experimenting with what he likes.
Yeah, like, he clearly says, I am a boy, but these are the clothes that I like.
He's a boy. He's too young to be into girls or boys.
He just likes
what he likes, and they let him do that. And they handle it well in that...
It's not ridiculous.
No, Dan, you know, is opposed to it, not for the reason you would think. He's opposed to it because of what other people might do to him.
Yeah, he's like, he gives them a pocket knife saying, should something ever happen to you?
Yeah.
And the kid, I forget the kid's name.
Mark, named after, I guess, Becky's dead husband.
Says, well, I was going to give it, his kid was going to beat me up, so I thought I'd give it to him as a gift. And it's remarkably well handled. I mean, I don't think Roseanne, I've seen a lot of articles deriding it. I don't think they hold a lot of water. I was impressed. I had a lot of fun with it.
I feel people are, at this point, are picking for the sake of picking.
Like they're looking for a reason to be pissed off.
Here's the thing. You're never going to have a perfect television show.
No, never.
And it seems to be this day and age, you just piss off everybody for every little thing. People are looking for reasons to pick something apart and get attention. And Roseanne isn't just harmless. I think it's actually good. It's what the message is giving is that people are genuinely good at their core. They may be misinformed or have the wrong ideas, but their meaning is well, is what they present.
I saw one article about Roseanne on Twitter, and I know I saw this for sure, saying, just because I have a different viewpoint than you doesn't mean we can't have a conversation.
And that's basically what the show is.
Yeah, I like the fact that it doesn't have to be extreme left, extreme right. You can have a meeting in the middle. Like, I was talking with Steve Megatron from Geekcast Radio on Future Imperfect, talking about differing political views. And when you can have a conversation, you genuinely get some really good bits out of it. Now, to kind of change things up here a little bit, we've mentioned shows like Community, like Home Improvement, etc., etc. One show that has been on the air, I think it is now the longest running sci-fi supernatural show outside of Doctor Who, is Supernatural right now. And never in a million years did I ever think I'd see an animated Scooby-Doo episode where Dean and Sam Winchester fight with Scooby-Doo.
And swear.
And swear. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, there's one point in the episode where I think it's Dean says to Fred, "You're fucking right, you are, buddy."
Yeah, and they beep it on everything, right? Or where they're like, "Zoinks, jinkies!" They cut to him, and he goes, "Son of a bitch!"
And it's amazingly well handled. I mean, like, there's still all the Scooby-Doo tropes, like, "Oh, that's just a guy with fishing line and Christmas lights." Like, no, there's really demons, ghosts, and monsters out there. You guys need to be ready for it.
There is a lot of blood.
And Velma goes, "Well, what the hell are we going to do? We're not equipped to fight this." And Daphne's like, "I'll get a shotgun." "No, I'll get two shotguns." And
just the sexual exploits that they're trying to go on with the women in the show.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you get Dean trying to score with Daphne the entire time. He's like, she's like, "Oh, you're such a lunkhead. You don't have an ascot," which is the neck scarf. Stuff like that.
Or comments of, "Oh, I should have known it was Velma that was ready to go." Like, but it's all played very innocently with the cartoons.
I mean, it's not something you could show a kid.
Well, and
someone who's 13 could definitely handle it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the audience, right? It's the, 13 or 15 to 39 or whatever is the age group they're looking for. Also, I am only on season 2 of watching it streaming, just catching up, because I had never watched it initially. And I can tell you, going into it, you don't have to have been watching the continuity of it to get it.
Yeah.
You can just watch it. There is a character I didn't recognize.
Castiel.
I had no clue who that was.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything in this is a standalone episode that you could just watch on its own.
Yeah, and that's the same way that I did it, because I've only seen season 1 of Supernatural. I knew who Cass is only because of the fandom. But when you look at the way television's taking risks with stuff, like I said, I never thought I'd see a Dungeons & Dragons episode of any sitcom, let alone 2 episodes. A paintball episode, a zombie episode.
Well, if you want to think of where that started, that might be the influence of Freaks and Geeks back in the year 2000.
Yeah, with Judd Apatow.
Because that final episode was about Dungeons & Dragons.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's one of the games, and it sort of unites the freaks and the geeks.
See, it's so strange to think that we live in an age of television where we can take a risk on this sort of thing. And I'm really happy to see that now. Like, I don't know how I feel about all these reboots and revivals. And me and Alex were talking about this last night, which, like I said, very much prompted this conversation to replace the news on this Easter weekend. What shows could succeed next? We decided you're probably never going to see a Seinfeld, because good luck getting that cast back together.
You'd have a chance to have to do a special, but even then, they're not probably going to do it.
Yeah.
Friends, they could try.
They've been talking about it for years.
But would anybody care at this point?
See, I'm surprised Will and Grace came back. All the shows to get revived.
I tried watching. I remember it was one of those shows that was on in the background when I was a kid, and I would, yeah. This one is just unfunny. The new show is just god awful.
It was never my thing.
It's very much, hey, look at us, we're a revival. We're going to wait for people to finish laughing before we move on. Look at us, we're back. That's the idea. Whereas Roseanne felt like they went on hiatus for the summer, and now they're back with season 9. This is the real season 9.
Yeah, like it literally doesn't skip a beat. A show that I think would be a very neat special if they could pull it off, because all the cast is still alive and still working in Hollywood, Cheers.
Yep.
If you could give me a Cheers movie and even give me a little bit of Frasier in there.
Give it, or you know what? You want to do a special? You do a 3-episode thing during the holiday season, or four. Do a miniseries. Do 4 or 5 episodes while every other show is on hiatus, since most shows take that 2-month break now.
I mean, my idea for that would be a Cheers Christmas special, Cheers Valentine's Day, and maybe 4th of July, or something like that.
No, it would have to be St. Patrick's Day.
Yes, and maybe Sam sells the bar and he's retiring or something like that. Because I remember the last episode of Cheers, he just says, we're closed, and that was how the series ended.
So that, I also think, now, some of the cast isn't around, but the only show I could think of coming back for a special or something to that extent that would either get the same ratings as Roseanne or more would be Fresh Prince.
Fresh Prince or Home Improvement.
Oh, they won't touch him now.
Yeah, with Tim Allen's show Last Man Standing and his very conservative views on Hollywood, like I said on Future Imperfect, he's not wrong for having
them. No, it's just right now he's a PR nightmare for them.
Yeah, it's one of those things you just don't want to deal with as a network.
And the ratings for his show went down and down and down and down, which was basically Home Improvement 2.0.
I mean, I could deal with, you gave me a 1-hour Home Improvement movie.
Yeah, if you did that.
Or another show I'm surprised it's so successful because it is so terrible is the Netflix revival of Full House. Fuller House. I thought the first season was okay, but it just gets progressively worse.
I mean, you could do the Wonder Years. You know what? If ABC was smart and they didn't want to take a risk, let's say with like Roseanne, where they gave it an 8-episode or 9-episode order,
yeah,
they could revive the ABC Movie of the Week, which they had for like 40 years, where they would have TV movies or they would cycle in, let's say, whatever movies that their parent company owned.
Yeah.
But they could start producing. Let's say they pick 5 of their shows from the TGIF days, and they do 5 specials.
Give me a Family Matters movie.
Give me a 65-minute or 70-minute movie with commercials, and do 5 or 6 of them, and rotate them. You get 1 a week for 7 weeks straight, and whichever one gets the most ratings, they revive.
I think that'd be cool. Like, I'd love to see Family Matters, because I know Reginald Vell Johnson's still around. I know Jaleel White's still around. And you could even address some things like Eddie Winslow. Because I know him and the girl Maya got together in real life and she passed away from cancer.
Oof.
They could even address that, saying, oh, my wife passed away and he's a widower now. Or widower, sorry. There's so many possibilities there. I like that idea of reviving it. Hell, look down the road in a couple of years if they wanted to do an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, because that's going to be coming to an end soon.
No, I don't care.
That's because you're Hitler.
Because I do not like it. But we're talking sitcoms. I do think the ABC Movie of the Week deal would work. If they did a special and they rotated them in, you're never going to get... Like, here's the thing. You're never going to get a Cosby Show.
Nope.
It can never, ever happen again. That could have eclipsed Roseanne, because they were head-to-head for many years.
Yeah.
You can't do Roseanne. You can't... If you go back to the 70s, you're risking people not knowing our age that know necessarily what it is. You could maybe do Taxi.
I don't think
most of them are alive. But maybe Who's the Boss? if you're going to do these things,
Family Ties.
They would
the
have
problem
to,
is you need Michael J. Fox or Spin City. You know what? You gave me a Spin City movie.
You could do that. You could do Wings. You could do a few of them. But again, I think the smart thing would be to rotate them in. Have record a 1 hour special for each of them, and you throw them on. Because now it's all about event things, right? Because you can't get people to sit down and watch a show unless you can binge watch it now.
Yeah.
But if it's a one-time-only thing, we're going to throw it on the network. And you might not get it on a streaming service. Or you might get it on one of their tied to, like, ABC's exact streaming service they own. Or it might show up on CBS All Access or one of these things. But if you do a timed exclusive, you know, one-time-only, we're going to show this. That's how you get your 20 or 30 million people on. And that's how you get your multi-million dollar ad buys.
Yeah. Like, there's so many possibilities, and hopefully...
Drew Carey show. Sorry. That I want back.
That would be nice.
Because, I mean, he's got to be getting bored just doing The Price is Right.
Yeah. It'd be a chance to reunite the cast. I mean, they're all just doing their own shtick right now.
And it was very ahead of its time. The comedy of that show is very now. That's sort of, in my mind, the precursor to the style of comedy you saw in Community in the background.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to think. Married with Children?
You could do that. I think Modern Family is still doing so well that they wouldn't let...
Ed Harris? Or not Ed Harris.
I don't think they would let Al Bundy go.
Yeah, I can't think of the actor's name. It's going to drive me nuts.
But then again, Roseanne got Johnny Galecki. And that apparently wasn't just like... That was a no-no because in his contract, he can't work for other studios. But CBS let it go because they thought it was so monumental to his career and it would be a ratings boost back and forth if it's successful.
Yeah, like there's so much possibility there just in establishing goodwill. So we want to hear your thoughts on this. If there's anything you guys think should be revived or very well could survive, definitely send us an email, feedback@thisweekingeek.net, or comment on the episode post.
And then we're going to talk about reboot.
And then we're going to talk about reboots, because that's something that we should talk about. Speaking of revivals and whatnot. Now, the reboot show aired in 1994, a year before Toy Story, and ran until about 2001. So 4 seasons over, what, 7 years?
Yeah, they took their breaks because it took forever to animate and get funding back then.
Yeah. So Reboot the Guardian Code is... a series that exists almost in its own continuity. It's a soft reboot of the reboot universe.
It is, until you hit the last episode of the season that's been released so far, the first half.
Yeah. For lack of a better description, you saw the trailer that was released back in February. And a lot of people were pissed off. I know people were shouting at Gavin Blair, who's one of the creators of reboots. A lot of people were just given... people who were involved in the original reboot shit. And a lot of people were giving the new company that's involved with reboot shit. And me and Alex literally just binge-watched 10 episodes of this before we recorded this particular podcast. And it's not terrible.
No. My opinion, like, if you wanted to boil it down to a number...
There's about 4 filler episodes.
If by itself, if this was a show, if this is your first show, then you're not introduced to the previous reboot, and this is a brand new show to you. As far as a show made for people ages, I would say 8 to 14 or so is probably the market they're looking for. It's probably a 7.5 to 8 out of 10 on average for that, comparatively to what else is out for them right now. In the live action / CGI space.
I mean, the closest thing you get as a comparison would be Power Rangers Super Ninja Steel.
Yeah. And that on that scale, it's about a 7, 7.5. If you're a reboot fan and you're really rabid about it, it's about a 6. It's better than passable.
Yeah. I mean, the series has some really nice nods. They do bring back Megabyte, which they do have a guy, Timothy Brummond, I think was the actor's name, who replaces Tony Jaa, who passed away a number of years ago. And it's rough. When you see Megabyte in the trailer, he doesn't sound anything like that. The voice gets progressively better.
Yes, his inflections at the beginning of where he'd be angry or say his commands, that was closer to the way the original actor did. Also, the way he's introduced is they literally show his original animation form from I would. It's before season two, I guess.
Yeah.
And then it shows him morphing and upgrading, but it removes his nose, and that's the hardest part of this. Is they removed his nose, probably for animation purposes to make it easier to animate because it's a flat surface now, but it's still, it's a little off. But by, let's say, the seventh episode of the season, his voice is almost spot on.
Yeah, like, it literally, like, wow.
You would almost think it was Tony J doing the voice again.
Yeah, I was really impressed by it, all things considered. Now, the weakest part, in some aspects, is the live-action part of this. It's not that the actors are bad, they're just not given a lot to work with.
No, it's filmed competently, it's lit well, it's you can see there's production value behind it. The CG sections, you can see they're doing things to save budget, but it gets better as it goes. So the pilot is the roughest episode of the whole bunch.
Yeah. By episode 10, which is the cliffhanger, which leaves us off until the summer, when the second half comes out in June, I'm fairly impressed because, spoilers, big ones coming right now. Bob comes back, Dot comes back, Enzo, Hexadecimal, and...
They replaced Enzo's voice because it's kid Enzo. This is all reboot beginning of season two is what it looks like.
Yeah, so
it's before Enzo has his birthday. But it also looks like they explain a little, but we'll get into that, why it is the way it is. I thought it was just going to be a thing of, oh great, they're just ignoring that the last, you know, 2.5 seasons of the show existed.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds to me like Dot is the original voice. Bob is one of the original voices of Bob, because there were two or three actors that did Bob, I believe. And Hexadecimal, I didn't even have to look. That's 100% Hexadecimal.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way... If you told me that's not Hexadecimal's original voice actress, she did an amazing job.
Yeah.
I didn't care for what they did to Hexadecimal's face, though. She has more expressions in her masks than she used to.
Yeah.
It used to be very static, and that's sort of jarring to me. I know it'll grow on me, but it's... Basically, they go back to Mainframe and they make jokes about how old Mainframe looks and it's retro and everything. But the explanation is it's literally a Mainframe server where they are, and they physically reboot it, so it's loading up from a saved archive backup.
Yeah.
So this isn't the Mainframe it is the Mainframe we saw, but it's an archived Mainframe, not the live one we were watching. So it's from whatever point, maybe when it's not been revealed or anything yet, but maybe when Megabyte first infected them.
Yeah.
You know, like, when it got to shit initially.
It's neat how they build in some new mythology into the show. There's a lot of questions that still have not been answered. There's this Department of Internet Security, which clearly has something to do with the Guardian Code. There's this thing called Dark Code or whatever.
Yeah.
There's this hacker called the Sorcerer. Krycek from the X-Files randomly shows up as a love interest for one of the guy's moms. I'm guessing he's a bad guy or
something. And episode 10, the Mainframe one, has somebody who we've yet to figure out who it is. He's either a voice actor or probably one of the original animators. I think there'd be no reason to have him in there otherwise. Where he looks like a super fanboy going to play a game in Mainframe as the user.
Yeah.
And he's got his place is plastered with all those old reboot toys that they used to sell. He's got a Mike the TV in the background, which made my day.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if that's the Mike TV voice actor. I kind
of
wonder.
It's either that or he didn't look and sound like he was one of the creators of this or one of the heads of the studio, but he might have been one of the animators.
Yeah, if someone knows, once again, feedback at thisweekingeek.net, definitely let us know. Overall, I'm going to say The Guardian Code is worth checking out. I don't recommend binging it, but I do recommend finishing it.
Yeah, I would say if you watched an episode or two a week, you'll be caught up by... Or an episode a week, you'll be caught
up... Treat it like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, you'll be caught up by the time the new episodes air in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think... It's going to get a lot of bad press because it's not the reboot that I grew up with. And Shout Factory just aired every single episode of the original reboot. Does the show hold up? Well, that's a matter of opinion. It's still a great show. It's still a landmark show in terms of what it accomplished.
The original was written for adults and children alike. This is written for children with some nods to the kids who grew up with it.
Yeah, I mean, to describe The Guardian Code, it's... Power Rangers with a reboot skin.
And they took Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad
yep.
as the template for the basic premise. It really is. We're talking I'm kind of surprised they haven't been sued.
Yeah.
Like, it's about 95% exactly the same.
Well, do you not remember the first time they went in to become Guardians? I said, okay, it's Morphin time. And yep. I literally did the motion with my hands because I was expecting them to go, okay, reboot,
but,
and then
but
touch
they
their chest.
They do announce their moves before they... That has become a
Energy
thing.
Energy Shuriken!
That has become a thing since Pokemon.
Yeah, or even Power Rangers, like Power Kid.
But they never really did that as much back in the day. They would
not
say it
so
the
much.
First time, and then you move on. They do a lot of that move stuff, and they do make a joke about it when they go into the game in the 10th episode in Mainframe. You know, they go to reboot, and they're like, oh, I guess we just don't get to do that. I guess that's something old.
Yeah, so that's our review and opinions on Reboot the Guardian Code. Definitely give it a check out, but treat it as a cartoon and realize this is not your daddy's reboot. This is a reboot for the new generation, and I wish the actors and actresses and everybody involved success because I'm kind of curious to see where it's going to go.
It doesn't blow goats.
It doesn't, surprisingly. And I'm a Sentai fan and I'm a reboot fan and I'm invested. So anyway, we're going to come back here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity. And in this installment of Satan's Pantry, fortunately, none of us have peanut allergies. And we're going to find out what happens next right here on This Week in Geek. Flagship show, Twig.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig. It's inedible.
Welcome back to this edition of Satan's Pantry, only on Twig, the flagship of stupidity. And last week we tried these jelly things, which turned out to be a definitive winner here in Satan's Pantry. And we're trying something a little bit different this week. We're actually trying another drink. This is from the company Grace. Evidently, this is product of Jamaica, I think. And it's peanut punch. It comes in a juice box.
Grace is quite popular. They've been around, what, 30, 40 years here? You can find them at most grocery stores. They're known probably more for their, like, ginger beer. And
I think I've had
them. And, like, pineapple
beer.
Drinks and pops and things like that.
Specialty items, a bit of novelty items. Nothing too out there, but... Stuff you wouldn't find necessarily in an average grocery store.
No, but I would say if a grocery store has an international section, they usually have that brand.
So, this peanut punch, what I'm expecting is liquid peanut butter.
Oh, I don't know. This could be really good or really bad.
You want to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, you go first. I will go last.
Pass it to the right.
I have a thing about straws.
I bet you do.
Oh, nuts.
Dick jokes. I love them.
Oh, boy.
Well, you are going to be drinking nut butter from a straw. So.
Nut juice. Nut punch. Nut punch.
All right.
That sounds horrible.
Here goes
I'm gonna
tell peanut punch.
What's the color? It's brown.
Yeah, of course.
It's light brown. Like chocolate milk with too
is
much
it
milk.
We're going to go reverse.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
That's delicious.
Let me. Oh, this looks good, though.
It looks and tastes good.
So wait, 240. It's 200 calories for 240 milliliters?
Holy shit.
That's like twice what Coke is.
Okay, it's like drinking a Reese's peanut butter cup.
But it's 8 grams.
Oh my god.
Wait,
so
tasty. It's 8 grams of protein.
It's a protein drink.
Legit. Shut up. My wife said she's not buying that.
Are you shitting me?
Doesn't it?
No, it's not like that. It's like... You know the peanut butter that you get on, like, Ritz Bits crackers?
Yeah.
If you melted that into a juice box.
Mm. 25 grams of sugar.
I still think it's Reese's.
It's not, it's a little off for me. It's more like those Ritz ones. It's like that peanut butter you get. It's peanut butter and peanut butter cookies. Like,
I'd
like
buy
crispy
that.
Peanut butter cookies.
8 grams of fat in a beverage.
But look at the protein. How many drinks
protein.
Have protein in them that are like in a juice box form?
Not many. Not
all right.
Not that aren't health.
Dude,
ones.
I'm not even kidding.
That's good.
If that's what dicks taste like, I'm converting.
Oh boy.
All right. Real nut butter. Yeah,
so
I'm
think?
Gonna agree with the Ritz peanut butter analogy. If you just melt that down, it's got a. Yeah. You can taste that thickness.
Like when you get peanut butter cookies in like the Christie or whatever.
Yeah,
boxes. And
yeah, those little sandwiches. Just microwave those for a while, and this just
that paste.
Yes, put them through a.
All right.
So now it's my go, and well, bottoms up, I guess.
It doesn't taste bad.
No,
at
it's
all.
Really good.
It tastes fine. It's just.
It's like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Thank you.
Really?
Thank you. Two votes for Reese. Two votes for Ritz.
Well,
There's no.
It's been hijacked by the women.
Yeah, the women that are here today are trying it.
Yeah. It's good. We got another vote for Ritz.
It's good cold too. It's just chilled enough.
It tastes better than the Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, Reese's Pieces.
It's Reese's Pieces.
Yeah. I'm
fine.
Reese's
you like being lucky.
I want to this. I want to eat 4 pounds of Reese's Pieces in one weekend. Well, actually,
this is the guy who branded me for eating 10 Reese's Starbursts.
Hell, I'm finishing this.
So we got pretty much.
That was when Alex was in his. I'm gonna bulk up to like over 600-pound phase. Okay,
it's pretty much even split in around the room between Reese's peanut butter cups and Reese's Pieces and these Ritz peanut butter.
It's snack. Dude. It's Ritz.
Yeah, I side on Ritz, but it's.
It was more bitter. Like.
Yeah, it doesn't have that the extra sugary sort of chocolate layer that Reese's does, but the peanut butter
it's like
is.
If you took the Ritz peanut butter fillings and you mashed them up real good and then put them in a blender and then added, there's got to be a juice base to that of something.
I hope you guys didn't want that.
I
didn't, but I will go out and buy that business.
That's
we got okay.
Blair, how much was that shit?
For one?
Yeah.
It's still worth it as a treat to yourself.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay,
yeah,
so
once a week or whatever.
Once a week?
Ingredients. <Hey. laughs>
Ingredients. Frugal.
Water, peanut butter, sugar, skim milk powder, stabilizers, caramel, sodium bicarbonate, vanilla flavor, and salt.
It's a peanut butter protein, basically.
It's so good.
Allergy information. Contains peanuts.
Okay. I put that on my cereal.
And refrigerate after opening and consume within 3 days. I don't know.
Oh my god, that and Cocoa Puffs? Can you imagine how delicious that would be?
Do you want
to
be a thousand
I'm not the one
pounds?
Who has to deal with
no,
it later.
No, no, no. That on Reese Puffs.
Yeah, that's legit.
Although, so, you might just die and have your arteries clog immediately.
That'd be a lot of sugar.
That's the price of Satan's Pantry, just gotta say. All right, so that's going to do it for this edition of Satan's Pantry. We'll be back next week with, I'm not entirely sure just yet.
Oh,
so
I'll bring something poisonous.
So stay tuned to Twig, as I've said before, the flagship of stupidity.
You're not good enough! Piss off!
Heya, Alex here, and I just got back from watching Ready Player One at my local Cineplex. I used my scene points, because I've got a crap ton right now, to go and check it out in the 3D AVX. So that's 1,500 points for anybody that is collecting scene points. And I would say it was well worth it. I've been seeing a lot of backlash as far as the book is concerned. I am somebody who never read the book. I never had any inclination to. I had heard of it. And I had heard it described sort of as, Harry Potter style meets one of those young adult dystopia future novels, sort of a la Hunger Games, something like that, but with name drops every 2 seconds, and it went overboard with too many references just for the sake of references. That didn't appear to be in the movie as far as I could tell. They only would ramble on a bit if it was important to it. So if it was something that was very obscure that nobody would get, they would have somebody explain what was happening, and like, oh, you mean this from this from this from this? And then somebody, if it went too far, would say, all right, shut up, we get it. And they would move on. So it, to me, seemed like just a pretty good popcorn flick, and I didn't see anything that was too egregious in it that would, let's say, taint it or give reason for anybody to get mad at it. Because I've seen people saying, oh, you know, it's not good for this reason or not good for that reason, and I purposely went in with a fresh mind, not wanting to read anything. And I found it to be a very enjoyable Spielberg popcorn flick. There's moments where the plot jumps forward a little too much, or there's sort of a leap in logic. Not really a leap, more like they didn't show you something that they probably could have shown you to get you to that plot point. But didn't really matter. This, to me, seems like a summer blockbuster flick that they happened to release early, probably because there's too much competition later on in the year. It had amazing visuals. It was the closest I could think of to maybe an Avatar, where it had real life parts of it, but then it also had the CG world, and it was smooth. The references that are in it, the cars, the characters, are all photorealistic. They're all at or above the quality that you would have seen them in the original properties they were in. So that was perfectly fine with me. The music was amazing. They picked soundtrack right out of the 80s and early 90s. I would have maybe picked maybe some more obscure things. But again, this is all about the normal, I'm saying it with air quotes that nobody can see, the normal, I guess, fandom that you'd find. So it's there's a few little things tucked in here and there, and there is probably hundreds of things in the background that you could watch the movie 100 times and still probably not get everything. All of the different characters or different references to things. I won't spoil anything in this, but there are some parts of the plot that have some random fandom involved with it that you may not get, or if you're a geek like me, like a real nostalgia geek, you'll probably get, and then you'll laugh your butt off at it. I'll give away one thing. What hooked me at the very beginning is you go past some Battletoads. And, of course, you figure the Ninja Turtles or something will be in there, but Battletoads, really? So they're there, and then basically this movie, when you're not watching the plot and what the basic main plot points are happening, you're looking in the background for all the little posters, the little characters, the little references to this and that. And I would say it was very enjoyable. Will I see it again? Would I buy it? I would probably buy it when it comes on video just to see all the extras and see all the behind the scenes. There's got to be a lot that went into making this movie that's probably just as interesting, if not more interesting, than the film itself. So I would say it's a definite watch. I don't know. If you're on the fence, let's say you didn't care for the book or you just want to wait and see it on a cheap Tuesday, go with some friends, make sure you turn your mind off and enjoy the popcorn flick. So check it out in theaters while you can, and definitely when it hits video. All right, guys, back to you.
And those were Alex's impressions of Ready Player One, which is now currently in theaters pretty much around the world as far as I know.
Yeah.
Right. So, coming up on the site this week, we will be launching a new pilot show. Now I'm committing, Alex, to it.
Called
Turd or Treasure, which will sort of be a reboot, if you will, of the Twig Review Show, which we should have out once a month. We'll also have a very special prototype later on this week where we bring back Screw Attack founding member and the Game Heroes founder, Handsome Tom Hanley, to talk about some of his history with the site.
Oh, the important member.
Yeah. Oh.
The important one that everybody likes.
I am staying out of the... I abstain. But anyway, yeah, we'll be talking with him on the prototype later on this week. We will be having a show this week. It'll be a little bit delayed due to WrestleMania, which will be coming next Sunday. There should be a Mayhem Mikes. I think I'm coming back on the show for WrestleMania on Mayhem Mikes. It'll be me, Alex, and Blanchard, as far as I'm...
And probably Ryan, too,
yeah. I'm trying to think of what else is coming out this way. I think that's pretty much the big thing. We'll have Twig, which you'll be hearing, obviously, right now. You'll have Turd or Treasure and the prototype.
We will also... Aren't we doing a special episode on...
Oh, yes. We're also going to give you a little bit of a 15 to 20 minute talking point on Netflix's Shut the Fuck Up Phone.
Oh, my God. Production.
Oh, my God. I love it when my phone randomly goes off. I have to take pills now. But we're going to be talking about Netflix's Lost in Space, which premieres on April 13th. You can see all the episodes. Me and Al should be talking about the first 5 episodes and see whether the series holds up as a reboot and revival of the 1960s television show. So without any further ado, for This Week in Geek, or Twig, we have been...
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying live free or die hard. Don't forget to turn off your phone and spay and neuter your pets, because it's just responsible pet ownership.
You've been a bad, bad boy.
That's right.
Well, kids, that's enough for one night, eh?
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I don't think this show is suitable for anybody.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear something like this.
Insert a clip here, you dick.
Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at This Week in Geek. And check out our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. If you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress. Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Oh,
suck a dick, it's a lot easier in my than it is on my belly button.
Okay.
Right near the jizz cave, thank you.
Holy fuck!
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.